hoard of cups, and her odd assortment of friends. A couple years before, it would have been the last way she'd have spent a Saturday. But things had changed. Her living arrangement certainly had, from a sparsely furnished apartment to the palace fortress Rourke had built. Her husband. And that was a change, even if they'd just celebrated their second year of marriage. Had the vision, the need, and, God knew, the means to create the gorgeous home with its myriad rooms filled with style and function. Here the grass was rich summer green, the trees and flowers plentiful. Here was peace and warmth and welcome. And she needed them, maybe just a little desperately at the moment. She left her vehicle at the front entrance, knowing Somerset, Rourke's major domo, would send it to its place in the garage, and hoped, just this once, he wasn't looming like a scarecrow in the foyer. She wanted the cool and quiet of the bedroom she shared with Rourke, a few minutes of solitude. Time, she thought, as she strode toward the doors, to shake off this mood before the invasion. Halfway to the doors, she stopped. The front wasn't the only way in, for Christ's sake. And why hadn't she ever thought of that before? On impulse, she jogged around, long legs eating up ground, crossed one of the patios, turned through a small walled garden, and went in through a side door. Into a parlor or sitting room or morning room, who knew, she thought with a roll of tired brown eyes, and made her way as sneakily as the street thief across the hallway, down and into the more familiar territory of the game room, where she knew the lay of the land. She called the elevator and considered it a small personal victory when the doors shut her in. "Master bedroom," she ordered, and then just leaned back against the wall, shut her eyes, while the unit navigated its way. When she stepped into the bedroom, she raked a hand through her messy cap of brown hair, stripped the jacket off her lanky frame, and tossed it at the handiest chair. She stepped onto the platform and sat on the side of the lake-sized bed. If she'd believed she could escape into sleep, she'd have stretched out. But there was too much in her head, in her belly, for rest. So she simply sat. Veteran cop, homicide lieutenant who'd walked through blood and death more times than she could count, and mourned a little. Rourke found her there. He could gauge her state of mind by the slump of her shoulders, by the way she sat, staring out the window. He walked to her, sat beside her, took her hand. "I should have gone with you." She shook her head, but leaned against him. "No place for civilians in interview, and nothing you could have done anyway if I'd stretched it and brought you in as expert consultant. I had him cold and cut through his battalion of expensive lawyers like a fucking machete. I thought the PA was going to kiss me on the mouth." He brought the hand he held to his lips. "And still you're sad." She closed her eyes, comforted a little by the solidity of him beside her, by that whisper of Ireland in his voice, even by the scent so uniquely him. "Not sad, or I don't know what the hell I am. I should be buzzed. I did the job. I slammed it shut. And I got to look them both in the face and let them know it." She shoved up, paced to the window, away again, and realized it wasn't peace and comfort she wanted after all. Not quite yet. It was a place to let it go, let it out, spew the rage. He was pissed, Moriarty. Lying there with that hole in his chest his pal put into him with his freaking antique Italian foil. "The one meant for you," Rourke reminded her. "Yeah. And he's pissed, seriously pissed, Dudley missed, and it wasn't me on a slab at the morgue." "I expect he was," Rourke said coolly. "But that's not what's got you going." She paused a minute,